Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 Well, Duffmouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Fast Company's annual list of the world's 50 most innovative companies had many of the usual suspects. Apple, Facebook, and Google all made it. So did the NFL, as did a company setting up green spaces in urban neighborhoods. And at number 12, Southern New Hampshire University, a private, not-for-profit university that depends on tuition and is located here in a state whose population of public high school graduates is projected to decline for years. Despite those challenges, SNHU is generating revenue and educating people who can't afford to or don't qualify for traditional university educations. Paul LeBlanc is president of Southern New Hampshire University in Manchester and is here to tell us what SNHU, I guess we can call it that, Paul?
You can call it SNHU.
Okay. What SNHU's done to land on the list with such big players? Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you, Virginia.
It's quite a feat.
We were pleased and a little surprised, and it's wonderful.
Well, this is largely recognition for the growth and strategy of SNHU's Center for Online and Continuing Education, or COSI, I guess you call it. Now, SNHU had an online program when you arrived. How did you grow it?
Well, you know, it was a small operation in a nondescript corner of the campus, and as we saw the growth of online nationally, especially driven by the for-profits, they thought we were squandering an opportunity to extend our mission. So Clayton Christensen at the Harvard Business School, who's often discussed around disruptive innovation, is on our board, and we took pages out of his playbook, moved them off campus, really sort of changed the culture, started to apply technology, rethink the business models, and then sort of aggressively invest, and we had the support of the board.
In fact, you were used in a case study, I believe, in his book about innovative.
We were featured in his recent book, which has had a lot of discussion nationally in higher ed circles.
Well, I'd love to get to some of that, but first, the COSI program. Who's your target student? Do you have an age range or a location?
Sure. You know, the typical student is somebody who's juggling work and career, also with family, also thinking about soccer practice and cooking dinner and getting the dishes in the dishwasher, and for whom traditional campus life doesn't work very well. It's not built around their hours. I always say that compare the scenario, it's the person who it's the person who is rushing from work, goes to the fast food line, eats in their car on the way to class, runs in, you know, takes their class and runs home as fast as they can to see if they might catch their kids before they're asleep. What online education does is not only provide quality education, but allows them to go home, be part of the family structure, put the kids away for the night, make a cup of tea, and then start their classes online.
Well, that's often a big concern about the quality of online education.
Right.
How do you get that sort of individualistic attention? How do you get that experience?
I think it's one of the great misperceptions. You know, 5 years ago, we might have thought, how do we get the online educational experience to be the equal of traditional face-to-face delivery? But there's a growing body of research supported by the Department of Education that confirms that the very best online education is equal or better than traditionally delivered education. So we've learned a lot, and tools are available to us that aren't available in the traditional classroom. The ability to gather data, the ability to really monitor student participation and interaction on an ongoing 24/7 basis. These are tools that just weren't available to us in a traditional setting.
How many students are online?
Currently, we'll end this year with 12,000 students online. Next year, we'll be somewhere around 30,000.
How does that compare to the on-campus?
Oh, on-campus, 2,500 traditional age undergraduates and another 1,000 graduate students.
So you're reaching a lot more people.
A lot more people.
And also, the revenues have been good. There's a huge revenue growth in the COSI program. I've got figures here from 2011 up to $74 million annually. Now, this is up from $10 million, I guess, in 2007. Now, how does that work? Do the revenues in online stay in online growth or the general fund to support everything on the campus?
Sure. You know, it's a little bit of everything. So we reinvest. For this year alone, we're investing $2 million in revision of existing online courses to improve the quality and sort of, you know, we want to do that periodically. But we also make large investments on the traditional main campus. We're undertaking $50 million of new investments in a library and a new dormitory and campus improvements, 10 more faculty being hired this year. So it creates a cross-subsidy to the traditional program, which does not support itself fully. A little bit of that goes into the endowment, which makes available scholarship funds, which we've increased greatly. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of all of those things. And the difference is, as a not-for-profit, we don't have to maximize profitability on a quarterly basis and worry about shareholder happiness. We worry about the quality of what we do.
This has been a great target in Congress, you know, with the idea of scamming taxpayers and students for for-profit universities.
Absolutely.
Well, let's see. You know, the student loan. Let's talk about the money here. Student loan debt now at $1 trillion. This is exceeding credit card debt in the United States in a time of really big questions about the quality and access and necessity of higher education in the U.S. today and the value of a college education, especially given how much it costs to get. Now, so what is COSI doing to address these kind of questions?
So a number of things. One is that we're committed to keeping the cost lower. So one can, for example, complete an MBA with us at a cost lower than the local public institutions in New Hampshire and almost every for-profit institution. Phoenix versus SNHU were more affordable. On the main campus, we've used that cross-subsidy to keep our costs lower. We're the most affordable private university in the state, and we had no tuition increase at all last year, even as we were raising scholarship support for students. So those are all parts of what we do. And then we have an innovation lab, an R&D group, and they're working on a new model. And really, I think it's a radically different model of delivery. And the goal there is to get the cost of a 1 year of college down to $2,500.
So that's affordable.
About $41 a credit.
We're speaking with Paul LeBlanc. He's president of Southern New Hampshire University in Manchester. The school was named one of the world's 50 most innovative companies by Fast Company. We're talking about some new innovation models for education. Let's hear about some of those. SNHU is a finalist for a Gates Foundation EDUCAUSE Next Generation Learning Grant. Now, I read through your grant application for the Innovation Lab. This is one of your future plans, and found this. The Pathways Project fundamentally restructures the delivery of higher education, dramatically reducing the cost of a degree and democratizing the educational process in ways that address access, quality, cost, and relevancy. Wow. What are you proposing? I mean, how do you restructure the system in that way?
So fundamentally, if you think about traditional higher ed, everything was about a whole set of inputs. Very expensive, highly trained faculty, beautiful facilities, huge collections of books and libraries, et cetera. And there was very little attention paid to outputs. That is, you have a bachelor's degree. That must mean you can write well, that you can think well, that you can problem solve. We are focusing on the end results. So what we're saying is that if you are very, very clear about learning outcomes and you're very, very good at measuring them, we ought not to care how you got there. And as soon as we can say that, we sort of blow up the monopoly that traditional higher ed has had on the delivery of education. So our notion is to push education out to a more self-paced model. Western Governors University has proven that that can work. To use more social networking theory, to leverage people's resources in their own workplaces and communities. It's a very, very different delivery model, and it drives a lot of the cost out.
Well, is the university system broken in your mind? I mean, does it need to be restructured fundamentally?
It depends what part of the university universe we're talking about. American research universities, envy of the world. The ability to produce really rich campus experiences like we have on our campus and other places in New Hampshire, envy of the world. Unmatched, really. But if we're talking about the poor, if we're talking about working adults, if we're talking about workforce development, if we're talking about the ability to drive down cost, even for middle-income families at this point, we really are broken in many ways. We're not delivering in the way that we once did.
Well, I know that, you know, to pull this off, an innovative model like that requires a lot of change in university culture. And I know that you have to employ developers as well as faculty. Now, there are some members of the SNHU faculty on the record concerned about this online growth kind of swallowing up the priorities, perhaps even the campus. So what are you doing to address those kind of concerns?
Sure. Well, the concern is not unfounded because I think new models are displacing traditional faculty roles, but our new models are actually providing more support for those who are in those roles at the other segment of the university, the traditional campus. So more investment in campus facilities, adding more full-time faculty, not fewer of them, and making more scholarship money available to students and keeping the price down. This is really, there's just no data to support the fear. But I understand the fear.
Well, there's also this accusation of, you know, the schools are being run by business models. Last fall, for example, we interviewed the scholar Benjamin Ginsberg. He wrote a book called The Fall of the Faculty. Pretty lacerating critique, actually, of bloated administrative staffs and the rise of what he called the deanlets and deanlings. These are the people he's accusing of shifting the focus from academics to growth and new business models. Sure. Let's just hear from him.
Deanlets and deanlings want to be customer friendly. They think that if we offer a curriculum that attracts students and their parents, we'll bring more customers to our schools. They view our schools as stores. The faculty, on the other hand, knows these customers. These are kids. And our job is to explain to kids what it is they need to know. They're not customers in the tradition of neoclassical economics. They don't have well-developed preferences. They need to be taught what it is that they should prefer.
Benjamin Ginsberg there. I'm speaking with Paul LeBlanc. He's president of SNHU. How do you distinguish an academic mission from a business model that, you know, these people are clients, we're churning them through? I mean, how do you keep it about academics and education?
Sure. I think in some ways Professor Ginsberg miscast the question, right? So my notion here is that if you're really, really thoughtful about the business, you actually get better at your mission. And I think that's what we're trying to do. And if you think about who we serve, we have to be much better at our service model. So that's where the business piece of this comes in. Real simple example. A lot of adults out there, 30 million with some college credits and no degree, when they apply to us, if we say to them, we need you to get your transcripts. Oh, my God, who do I call, and when will I find time? And I put that on my to-do list, and I don't remember what year I took that class, and it falls away, right? There are 100 reasons for adults not to enroll. So part of our notion is to get them involved, to get them sort of enrolled and engaged. So now we say, click on this button, we'll chase down your transcripts, we'll pay the $10 fee, and we'll get that done in 48 hours, and we move them along through the process. That's really good customer service.
You don't come from a traditional academic background. Why is this important to you? Why is this your mission?
Sure. I think a couple of reasons. You know, from a broad policy perspective, we're going to have a huge, huge issue in this country as we've slipped from number 1 to number 11 in the world for the percentage of adults with college degrees. As we know, 70% of jobs require it. And on another level, I came from a very modest background. I saw what education could do and how it could transform my life and the life of my daughters and our family. So it's both. We have to do it for the good of the country, and we should do it because it's the right thing to do.
Oh, Paul LeBlanc, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Paul LeBlanc, president of Southern New Hampshire University, that's in Manchester. And the school was named one of the world's 50 most innovative companies by Fast Company. You'll find a link to that list, also an op-ed by Paul on access to education and other articles on what he called disruptive innovation. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. And you can also educate us online with your feedback or ideas. We're at Word of Mouth Radio on Facebook and at Word of Mouth on Twitter.